Cinema Chat Podcast, your source for all movie news, reviews, and opinions on movies, past, present, and future.
Welcome, everyone. Cinema Chat Podcast, another episode. What's up, guys? How's it going, Rob?
Hey, everybody. I'm Rob.
And I'm Brent.
And welcome to another edition of the Cinema Chat Podcast.
This week, we're going to be doing Disney Pixar's Inside Out.
The latest animated feature. We're a week late on it, but still in the theaters and going to give you our little spin on it.
Yeah, plenty of people have been out to see it. I know. I went and saw it last weekend. Rob, you went and saw it this week, didn't you?
Yeah, I saw it yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow. So it's pretty fresh for you.
Right.
Cool.
Yesterday afternoon. But I saw it in just standard definition. Did you see it in 3D?
I did not. I went 2D on this one.
Yeah, I don't think this is really a 3D worthy
movie. Yeah, it didn't seem
movie. But anyways, let's get into our movie news of the week. First off, did we talk about Tom Holland as the new Spider-Man?
No, we didn't.
Yeah, check it out. Sony finally finalized who they want to be the new Spider-Man.
Interesting to me. I'd heard that that was Sony's first pick. It wasn't necessarily Marvel's first pick. But saw some tweets, and it seems like Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. are behind him, so that's good. I haven't seen him in much. He was good in did you see The Impossible with Ewan McGregor? That tsunami movie?
No, I didn't.
He played his son in that, and he was pretty good in that. So he's got some chops, and I saw some stuff that he posted on Instagram of him flipping around and shit. He looks athletic, so.
All right, so we'll see how he do. And supposedly he's going to make his first appearance in Captain America: Civil War, even though I think unless they already had it all set up in the script and they're leaving him for like one of the final shoots.
It seems like it's going to be a pretty small, almost bordering on a cameo. Unfortunately, is what it sounds like. So, but yeah. It's going to be good to see Spider-Man finally in the fold where he belongs.
Yeah, and did you hear that Sony threw all, like, when Marvel sold the rights to Sony, they threw all this stipulations at them, like, say, hey, Peter Parker has to be this, this, and this, and Spider-Man is this, and this, and this.
I did see, did that come out in the Sony, like, the email leaks? Is that where
yes.
That's coming from?
Yeah,
okay, that seemed like something really weird to have put out there.
Yeah, it was like, hey, you, if you're going to use Spider-Man, well, yeah, you have to do this.
He's got to be Peter, and he has to be white.
Ooh, yeah, he got his powers in middle school, and he's heterosexual, and he's he doesn't smoke, and he doesn't curse.
Way to go, Sonny.
So it was pretty funny, this whole Spider-Man issue going on over there. They made such a big deal about it.
Yeah. And also...
Yeah, it's just like you said, that Sony was like the one who was like kind of pushing it, you know, and Marvel, you know, was just, you know, it's just trying to make it happen, and Sony's, you know, the one giving the hard time.
Meanwhile, over in Marvel comic books, Miles Morales is taking over in their new... you know, they're rebooting all of their comic book storylines. They're just rebooting everything and starting over. And Miles Morales, who is the Black Spider-Man, he's going to be the Spider-Man in the new one. And Peter Parker actually does exist and is alive in this timeline. So interesting that they're doing that.
Yeah, I think they should like let the Peter Parker character go on the sidelines. And, like, pass it on.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing something different, necessarily. But that being said, I am excited to see what Marvel does with him.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be good. And I can't wait for next summer or
also,
next...
Also, Yeah. Also, it sounds like whenever they do the standalone, that they're going to be maybe bringing some Marvel characters and actors over into the Sony movie. There's a little scuttlebutt that Robert Downey Jr. might play a pretty significant role in the Spider-Man's solo movie.
Wouldn't it be awesome if they do the Iron Spider?
Oh, that would story? Be really that would be really cool.
Yeah, I think so.
What it sounds like they're doing, at least what I've heard, is that it might be sort of like Iron Man trying out Peter for the Avengers to see if he has what it takes, because he's pretty early on in his crime fighting days. Looks like they might have old Tony giving him a run, seeing if he can make it.
See, but the thing is, the way that the current MCU has been set up is it's kind of like where Captain America has always been like the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me hard to believe that, you know, Tony Stark, Iron Man, has always been kind of like the rebel of the group, that he's not, and he made it abundantly clear in the first Avengers movie that he's not a soldier. You know, he doesn't follow the rules. He makes his own rules.
Well,
kind
and
of a persona.
I do think the fact that Spider-Man is kind of created through science kind of lends it a little more to Tony. But I could see them bringing Chris Evans in also. That would work too. There's also the, you know, Chris Evans hasn't re-upped on his contract.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that he's willing to move forward beyond what his contract is stated, which is not something he had said previously. But he still has yet to do that. So they seem to have a better working relationship with Robert Downey Jr. at the moment.
Oh, absolutely. He's the golden boy, the anchor, so to speak.
Either
and also,
way, I'm excited.
Let's not forget about Sebastian Stan's, you know, kind of large contract, where he's supposed to be in like a whole bunch of movies too.
Yeah, and Anthony Mackie also.
Yeah,
they've got a lot of different ways that they can go.
Exactly, and I'm sure that people will just gobble it up no matter what.
Well, they know what they're doing.
Yeah. On another note, in the news that Star Trek 3 started shooting recently.
Yay.
And and also it seems that the actors were able to get Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto.
Yeah. They got a little bump.
Yeah, they got also they got another Star Trek 4 movie in their contract, so they'll be getting like $6 million each.
Yeah, I was a little
to do
surprised.
The movie.
Whenever I read that they'd gotten the bump and that it went to $6 million, I was surprised that Chris Pine only made $600,000 on the first one.
Well, it's probably like you know, let me get my foot in the door kind of deal.
Yeah.
And or he could have had a back end deal, like, you know, I'll only take this much up front, but then, you know, if you make, he'll get a percentage of the back end.
Yeah, they kind of have Paramount bent over right now, because you can't fuck with Captain Kirk and Spock, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They've already got their timeline set up, and they've got that franchise going, so, you know, they've got Paramount right where they want them. They have the ultimate bargaining. It's not, you know, Terrence Howard and Don Cheadle. I don't think people would swallow it very well if you just replaced Chris Pine.
Right. And speaking of Paramount, in the latest Terminator Genesis movie, Paramount couldn't use any of the any footage from the original films because they don't own the rights to the previous films.
Jesus, I think every film in that franchise is owned by a different company.
Yeah, the first one was done by Orion.
Uh-huh.
And then the second one, I don't remember who did the second one, but the third one was by Universal.
Mm-hmm.
So every one of the movies was owned by a different studio.
That's amazing.
And I actually saw a scene where they actually recreated the original Terminator when he first arrives in 1982.
Oh, they just rebuilt it?
They just recreated recreated it with new actors, and they rescanned Arnold's face and, like, redid his skin. Mm-hmm. So you have old Arnold's face with, you know, like 1982 hair, and like they probably photoshopped all the wrinkles and things out of his face, and they just probably had like a body double do the actual body part.
Can you talk me into being excited about this movie? Because I have no desire whatsoever.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of like staying away from the critic reviews right now because they're already out since the movie's going to be coming out next week. And I'm trying to keep an open mind right now to see if this whole timeline reboot has some kind of cool effect that will propagate maybe more movies. But, you know.
I think I'm going to have to take a wait-and-see approach on this and see what other people have to say about it. Because
so far, the commercials have not been too promising.
I'm not into it at all. I don't know.
Well,
and it's a shame because that's the kind of movie that I usually, like, flock to.
Yeah, definitely. Me too.
I have nothing for it right now.
Right now it's just a holdover until the Ant-Man movie comes out.
That I'm on board with.
Yeah, that one is looking really good.
And I cannot wait.
They just released the international trailer for Ant-Man movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it goes more into the Scott Lang character as to, you know, why he's doing what he's doing. And just like any good story, you want to make the audience feel for the character in the movie. And I think that's what they're trying to do here on a a very lighthearted, you know, nothing too heavy on that part.
I think they're really going for something different with this one, and I'm excited to see what they do.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be more lighthearted, a lot more laughs. I don't think they would have brought in Paul Rudd, for something serious. And, I think he's going to have a big part in the rest of the, you know, cinematic universe. As we already know, he's filming in the Civil War movie as well.
And Ant-Man's always been, you know, he's like one of those core members of the Avengers. And I'm excited. I think he's gonna play a much bigger role in Infinity War than people think he will.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if they're going to not continually use the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Since, in the last movie, not to spoil anything, but they might be getting away from that character, which also brings up that there might be a possibility of seeing the Red Hulk pop up in the MCU.
That wouldn't be bad.
No, not at all. And I think that if anybody knows about the Red Hulk, I think it could actually add some much needed flair and even more tension to the Avengers, even though the Red Hulk has always been more of a standalone Hulk character than an actual Avengers team member. But, we'll just have to wait and see. We got, over 5 years of scheduled movies ahead of us.
There is a shit ton of movies coming our way.
And on another note, continuing with the Marvel theme, that the director of the Selma movie is possibly in talks about directing the new Black Panther movie that's supposed to film in South Africa.
Really?
That's right.
That's interesting. That would be their first female director, for one thing. I think that pick actually makes a lot of sense. Have you seen Selma?
No, I haven't. It's not into, political.
Well, movies. It's a really good movie. I think there's a lot of politicism behind, the Black Panther movie. I think it's gonna be a tone, a political tone in that movie, at least somewhat. And I think that might make sense. I actually don't think that's a horrible choice if they go that way. I'm all for that.
Yeah, they, from what I recall, that they were, there was a minor synopsis released on it that, you know, in the past movies we've seen vibranium come up in the movies, and it kind of, I think, brings out the characters, like, how is all this, you know, getting out of the country, you know, why is nobody in control, and then this is gonna spark up, you know, like, okay, where's the leadership in this country, and then it's gonna bring out the story of, you know, one man in this responsible role trying to, you know, maintain order and blah blah blah.
Yeah,
and
Wakanda's always been known for a little bit of civil unrest. And,
right.
You know, I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah, and it's it's kind of like depicting like what's going on in, you know, current day, like West Africa, where you know warlords and, you know, criminal elements are like just taking all the natural resources for themselves, and while the rest of the country lies in poverty and the government has no power in this area. But, you know, hopefully, you know, it won't be all humdrum politics about this, that, and the other thing. I hope that they'll have, you know, a good story about the Black Panther, you know, coming out, establishing himself, you know, have some good character building, and joining the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Well, if it does have political undertones, we can have Hadanus on here with us.
Yeah, he's definitely into the politics. But
I really, while we're on that for just a second, I just want to say I really enjoy, he does the In My Humble Opinion podcast. Hadanus, buddy, I really enjoy it. I'm digging it.
Yeah, good job, and we definitely respect what you're putting out there.
Yeah, they're on kind of the same trajectory that we've been on, as far as starting around the same time. I've talked privately with them about, you know, behind the scenes stuff, and I'm really happy to see where he's going with it. Good job.
Yeah, he's a movie guy too, so
yeah, it's definitely. Oh, we're definitely going to have him on here.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. We got to set that up.
Yeah.
Our last topic for movie news is that they're starting to work on the Ben Affleck solo Batman movie. I didn't think that Ben Affleck was going to continue the role after Batman vs. Superman.
I'm beyond excited that he is. And even more excited that he's directing it. Because everything he's directed, I've loved. Every single thing he's directed, I've loved. And I cannot wait. That got me way more amped for it than I already was.
Well, you know, because he's starting to work on another movie.
About the FIFA.
Right, the FIFA corruption.
Yeah.
That he's going to be directing that movie as well.
Dude's got some chops. Yeah. If you haven't seen Argo or The Town, I highly recommend both of those. Very, very good movie.
Yeah, I recommend The Town over Argo because of Jeremy Renner's
He's so good
performance. Yeah, he's so awesome. So, yeah, if you're going to check out either of those movies, check out The Town first.
We should do that one week, The Town. I love that movie. We should talk about
that. Yeah. Yeah, I actually have it on DVD. So I can pop it in the player at any time, awesome. You know, and watch it. You know, physical media is not dead, everybody.
No, not quite yet. It's getting there. Yeah. Real quick, I did see that Vin Diesel, there's been some news about Furious 8.
Right.
Jason Statham seems like is set to reprise his role as Deckard Shaw, and
he wants to bring Helen Mirren into the series.
He wants to bring Helen Mirren in, which I think is awesome. She could play right along those lines of the, you know, the character she played in Red. And she's publicly said that she would love to play a villain in a Fast and Furious movie. And I think that's a good fit.
I think it would be funny if it would. She's Deckard Shaw's mother.
Oh.
And she comes and breaks him, or gets him and teams up with him to get revenge, and it's, I think it would be pretty funny.
Dude, go ahead and write the spec script, send it off to Chris Morgan, let's get this thing going.
Let's get this show going.
A Cinema Chat Podcast.
Original.
Furious 8. Original film. I like it.
Yeah.
One more thing before we get into our review, and it kind of dovetails into the review. Wanted to talk about the box office.
Yeah, let's do the box office results for last weekend.
Jurassic World killed it again, breaking the second weekend record. Once, you know, another record broken. It's came in with $106 million. And just behind that at $90 million was Inside Out. It's Pixar's first ever opening that was not at number one. And it's actually the highest ever opening. It's actually the highest ever weekend for a movie that's not number one. There's never been a movie, I don't believe, above $70 million that didn't hit the first spot. So that's, you know, it sucks, but, you know, they're still crushing it.
Yeah, Inside Out didn't do bad. It did $90 million.
$90 million, that's huge. Yeah. And then everything else, it just kind of, you know, just completely dropped off after that.
I'm surprised to see the movie Dope at the number five spot.
That looks really good.
Yeah? That's probably going to be one of those stoner classic movies that all the college kids will be raving about.
It looked really good. But I went over the weekend, like I said, I went and saw Inside Out. And I've never seen my local theater that I go to. I've never seen it that busy. I parked what felt like 2 miles away. And I went with my kids, and we had to walk all the way in. And it was just, I was shocked to see that many people at the movie theater at the same time. And then whenever I saw that, you know, those two movies combined for almost $200 million, it kind of, you know, told me everything I needed to know about why it was so busy. You know, it's been a slow year sort of for, you know, ticket sales, and this weekend really just crushed it.
Yeah, the my local theater had that movie in multiple theaters in standard and 3D, and the day I went, there was like two school buses of kids from a summer camp there too, so the place was a little crazy. But I mean, you know, we went like a week after the and the theater was still, you know, not jam packed but still full.
We went we got there 30 minutes before the one that we were going to see, and we wound up having to go to a showing 45 minutes later. So we actually, my kids, I don't know if they enjoyed it quite as much as they would have if we hadn't had to sit around in the theater lobby for an hour before the movie, but I was shocked.
Yeah.
Needless to say, I was very surprised. Usually, with those animated movies, you know, you get there a half hour beforehand, you're good. This one.
Disney Pixar, you know, has had a long running series of successful movies. And the director who did this movie also directed Toy Story and Wall-E and Up, and those have always been their big money makers. So it's no surprise that, you know, this movie definitely is at the same level as those previous movies.
He's Pete Docter knows what he's doing. He's good.
Yeah, and there was a trailer, an extended trailer for the Minions movie.
That looks good.
Yeah, which surprised me because it's not, you know, a Disney, you know, it's a Illumination Studios movie, and I wouldn't think that they would have that in front of a Disney Pixar.
There's been a movie. Lot of crossbreeding with trailers lately. I mean, you know, they showed, they were supposed to, at least I didn't get it, show that Ant-Man footage in front of Jurassic World, which, you know, that's two different companies. I was pretty surprised that they would do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Yeah, I think it has to all, you know, with the distributors or whatnot. Yeah. But, yeah, let's continue and talk about the Inside Out movie that, you know, we were talking before that we were surprised about all the voice acting that was in this movie.
Yeah, they got a pretty good cast.
Yeah, it's a well-known cast of voice actors, mostly comedians, which I was
almost exclusively.
Yeah, which Amy Poehler, that's how you say her name.
Yeah,
she plays the main emotion, Joy, which I found the way that they animated her was perfect for that role.
Yeah, very pixie-ish.
Yeah, and she had like a little warm glow about her, like which I didn't
like an aura.
Yeah, exactly, which I didn't really see on the other emotion characters. Which were done by Bill Hader, who played the role Fear. Lewis Black, he voiced Anger, which he did an awesome job.
That's perfect casting.
Yeah. And Mindy Kaling did the voice of Disgust. If we know her from The Office.
And or the Mindy Project.
The Mindy Project, right. And Phyllis Smith does the voice.
Phyllis from The Office.
Yeah.
Smith. She does Sadness, and she's really good.
Yeah.
And Sadness was surprisingly one of the funnier characters in the movie to me.
Yeah, and I didn't make that connection initially of who she was.
Uh-huh.
And then I found out, I was like, hey...
Yeah.
You know, that was pretty good.
And then there's another character. It's the little girl's imaginary friend's name's Bing Bong, and it was driving me up a wall through this entire movie trying to figure out who the voice was. And it's actually Richard Kind, and I had to stick around and watch the credits just to figure out who that was because it was driving me crazy. I mean, I guess I could have just went on IMDb, but I was already sitting there.
I think it's most famous for his role in Spin City with Michael J. Fox. But he's had minor roles in a lot of movies. Most recently, Argo. He had a role in there.
He goes back to Pixar's first movie,
A Bug's Life.
He did the voice of Molt in A Bug's Life. So he's been with Pixar for a while.
Yeah, he's a good comedian.
Yeah. I enjoyed this cast. I mean, all the way down, you've got a couple of Saturday Night Live people. One of them, Bobby Moynihan, he's in there for a little bit. Just a lot of a solid cast. And if y'all don't know already, the movie is about a little girl and these different emotions inside of her head interacting and how that drives someone to be the person that they are.
Yeah, their personality.
Yeah, that's what the movie's about, in case you haven't seen it. Which emotion did you like the most?
Well, it definitely would have to be Lewis Black's Anger.
Yeah, I really enjoyed him quite a bit.
Yeah, it whenever the situation got a little bit out of hand, he always stepped forward, and he's pretty much the one who that keeps the story going.
Mm-hmm.
Where you think it would go a little bit flat, and he definitely brings it in. If nobody's gonna do something, I'm gonna do something. And it definitely showed in this film that he was able to pull it off.
I liked him a lot. Both of my kids walked away from it talking about Disgust, which I didn't think she didn't play one, she was one of the smaller roles of the five.
Mm-hmm.
But they were really drawn to her. I think there's something about the mean girl way that Mindy Kaling delivers her sentences.
Yeah, but she was kind of like the fashion, you know, fashionista of the group. Uh-huh. And, you know, the one that controlled Riley's, you know, what to wear, what not to wear, mm-hmm. what to do, what not to do, kind of in social situations.
One of my favorite things in the movie is that, you know, whenever Riley has interactions with other characters, occasionally they will go into the, like if she's sitting at the dinner table with her mom and dad, they'll, you know, go back and forth between her head and into the dad's head, mm-hmm. with all his, you know, he's got all of his feelings that, you know, they've all got the mustache and then they jump into the mom's, and it's like they all have the same five core emotions, but they all behave in a way that is, you know, similar to that particular character. And I like watching the interplay. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was funny that in the father's head, anger was like the primary
mm-hmm.
Emotion and control, where in the mother's head, it was sadness that was was in control, which was like a little bit strange to me that you know, we were having been in Riley's mind that like Joy is the one who's mainly in control of the personality.
I really liked what they did with, you know, the memories.
Yeah.
And how, you know, they're segmented. And
they also, like, went into, like, some technical terms about how the brain operates,
mm-hmm.
which I think would appeal more to the adults than to the kids. But,
like, my kids don't understand. They didn't connect with how the whole, the core memories, you know, how there's certain points in your life, certain mm-hmm. you know, benchmark moments that really help shape who you are as a person,
right?
And that there, you know, the more you think about it, there really is a lot of truth to that. There, I can think back at several points in my life at particular moments that made me realize, you know, what I wanted to do. This podcast, for example, I can remember sitting down and listening to Smodcast, Kevin Smith's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the second episode I'd listened to, and they were kind of talking about how they were doing it and, you know, the benefits to, you know, you get to sit down and talk and then you just post it on the internet. It's there for everyone to listen to. It's a real creative outlet. And from that moment, I wanted to do this. It took me a long time to get here, but I can think back at that particular moment that, you know, a core memory that will shape what I do going forward, you know. I'm hoping that this will become a big part of my life. I enjoy doing it. And,
right.
You know, I really hope that it becomes a bigger part of my life.
Yeah, and then in the movie we see that, like, after the resolution that more of the personality islands
mm-hmm.
show up, which, you know, were established that, you know, core memories continually occur to continually add to your personality.
Mm-hmm. And they've got, you know, it's a fucking Pixar movie. I'm not going to spoil too much.
Right.
you know, sadness might touch a memory. And for some reason, when sadness touches it, it changes this happy memory to a sad memory. And that affects Riley. And it's almost like a, you know, a Back to the Future timeline kind of thing, where, right. you know, she changes the memory in the present, but it changes, obviously, the memory in Riley's brain, and it gives a negative feeling towards a moment in the past that's already happened that was a happy moment.
Right.
So, you know, you've got that kind of thing mixed in there, too. You know, they're messing with timelines and how all that contributes to everything. It's kind of a cool thing. There, you know, the more I thought about it after I saw it, I enjoyed the movie. I liked it quite a bit. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized how much of that just, you know, is what Pixar does. It just flies over kids' heads.
Right.
It doesn't prohibit them from enjoying the movie, but it really gives the adults something to chew on.
Right.
And think about.
I think it's important in this type of movie that you have to appeal to both the adults and to the children, mm-hmm. because the adults are initially the ones that bring the kids to the movie. And I'll be honest with you, there's been a couple of movies that I've taken my son to that I've flat out fallen asleep in.
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that they were so, so boring and so garbage, where my son enjoyed it because, you know, it was...
They were playing to him.
Yeah, they were playing to him, but not to the mm-hmm. adults, and it was just flat out boring for me.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Pixar, like you said, has a long history of being able to appeal to, adults and kids, and that's probably the leading reason to their success and why Disney has been raking it in with them ever since.
I mean, don't get me wrong, my kids, you know, they saw the previews and they see the, you know, the characters in the Disney store, the stuffed animals and all this mm-hmm. stuff, and they wanted to see it. But this is a movie that primarily, you know, I pushed. I wanted to see this movie. My girlfriend, she went with us. She wanted to see this movie.
And I was the complete opposite. You know, I didn't want to see this movie.
I thought from the get-go, from the trailer, I was like, that is a great idea for a movie. And I was really interested in it.
Yeah, I read that that Pixar actually got the idea for Inside Out from a defunct Epcot Center ride. That,
oh, really?
Yeah, that was never created, about how the brain works, and that's how they got their idea to make the movie.
Huh. I did not read that. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's how they got the idea for the movie.
I'm looking at the IMDb page for Inside Out. And they've got this thing on it up at the top where you move your mouse over the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you put it over anger and, you know, he starts getting pissed off and the fire comes out of the top of his head and disgust is, like, checking her makeup and joy is all happy and sadness is crying. And then you put it on fear and starts, like, jumps up out of his chair or whatever and starts waving his arms and running around in circles.
Yeah, it's like, don't touch me.
It reminded me of in the movie, you know, when she's rolling around on her scooter and he's freaking out at every little thing that she comes around.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff really cracked me up. You know, each individual emotion had their particular moments where, you know, they were on. It was their turn to take over. And his was always like this... Yeah, almost like a helicopter parent.
You know? Yeah, well, we forgot to mention that that fear. We didn't speak too much that Bill Hader is also like a SNL veteran.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's
like
a lot.
Amy Poehler. Mm-hmm. And I think they might have pitched his voice a little bit higher than normal because I know his voice isn't that high normally.
Maybe. They may have. But, I don't know. I don't know if he could get up there or not, but he delivered. They all, you know, I've said it multiple times, but they all deliver pretty much exactly what you would want them to. You know, they hit a home run with mm-hmm. their cast.
They sure did, and yeah, like we mentioned before, like the director Pete Docter uses the same formula like he used in his previous movies to bring you along on a journey for you to relate to the characters,
mm-hmm.
to get you attached to them, and then once the resolution has been completed, then you feel relieved for the characters because you kind of feel how they are feeling, and mm-hmm. I'll be honest that you know my heartstrings were being tugged on and I got a little teary eyed mm-hmm. at the end and everything. It is definitely brings your emotions out,
right? particularly for a parent,
right?
But yeah, I mean, it like I said last week, they know what they're doing with that. And you know, they know the beats to hit, and they do it often, and they do it correctly almost every single time. They've had a couple misses here and there, but, you know, who doesn't?
Yeah, which one of the Pixar movies is your favorite?
I really like both Toy Story and Toy Story 3. Mm-hmm. And depending on the mood I'm in, either one of those could take the top spot. I think that Toy Story 3 delivers on an emotional level more than the first one. But I also think that the first one is a lot funnier. So, you know, depending on what I'm feeling in that moment, I could go for either one of those. But the Toy Story franchise is right up at the top for me, especially 1 and 3. And then I would put Inside Out pretty close up there. And then Monsters, Inc. is another one that I really enjoy.
Yeah, for me, it would have to be Up because how emotional it is.
Yeah, that one gets you right in the first fucking 5 minutes.
Yeah, that one is like right up in your face.
Yeah.
With that one. And then it would have to be Wall-E as well.
I respect that movie for what it is, and I know what people see in it and what they enjoy. That movie does nothing for me.
No?
No, and I can't put my finger on it as to why, but I just really don't like it.
Yeah, the beginning is a little bit slow, I'll admit that, but it definitely picks up after that. And
sorry, I interrupted you. What else on your list?
No, that's what I was going to say. It was just those two movies. I think that this movie definitely ranks up there with them, which Pete Docter also directed those movies as well. So I think that you know emotionally I'm on an accord with these movies and this one, but it's very refreshing to see that they've kind of gone into something totally different, where, like, you know, they're not just pumping out sequels like some of the like a lot of movie houses are doing these days.
What did you take away, maybe if you noticed this, whenever they go into, like, say, Riley's parents' brains, you know, Riley's emotions are not gender specific. They aren't replicas of her. But whenever they go into the mom's brain or the dad's brain, it's all female or all male, and they pretty closely mimic, you know, what that parent is. What was your takeaway from that?
Well, remember at the end when they redo the control panel, and they add the puberty button? I think that's what happens.
And you get that brilliant, can I say that curse word now?
Yeah.
Yeah, what I took away from it, I had two schools of thought about it, and they might both be true. One, I think whenever you're jumping around, especially in that dinner table scene, you've got all three of them there, and, you know, if you go into each one's brain, that's five more characters for each one, so you're talking about 18 characters. And I think if you give each parent separate, you know, types of emotions with different characteristics, then you're talking about a shit ton of characters in a short span, and it's hard to keep them straight. And I think that they wanted to be able to jump into each one's brain and know immediately which one was which. But I also think it says something about, as you get older, you become more set in your ways and you understand yourself better.
Right.
And maybe your emotions are a little more tightly defined.
Right.
And the emotions are more you, whereas as a child, you're just, you know, everything is, you know, to a times 10 intensity, and you don't always know what you're feeling. You don't understand it. And I thought that that might have been a really quite conscious decision to show the difference between kids and adults, and maybe to show that, while adults don't necessarily have their shit together. You know, they do tend to know more of who they are than a child, and I thought that that was a good way to show that visually, as opposed to, you know, just saying it. I thought that was a nice touch that they threw in there.
Yeah, it was like very brief. They didn't dwell on it for very mm-hmm. long.
Yeah. It stuck with me, though. That is something that stuck with me after the movie. I found myself really thinking about this movie a whole lot more than I typically do with a kids' movie. And maybe that's because it had to do with, you know, the brain and your feelings and stuff like that. It made me a little more introspective than I typically am after a kids' movie. It left me with a lot of different feelings. I guess it shows that it did its job.
Yeah, it certainly did, and I believe that that's going to be one of the big successes for that movie, is how that the audience will relate to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think that if they wanted to, they could make a sequel. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, there's a huge difference between a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old.
Right. Well, I think she was 11.
Well, 11 and 13. Still, you know, you talked about them hitting the puberty button.
Right.
That presents a whole new set of emotions and difficulties. I think that they could if they wanted to. And judging by the box office, I don't see any reason why they won't try to make another one. They've shown that while they don't always do sequels well, that they can. You know, Monsters University was not great, but, you know, you've got the Toy Story sequels that are good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they've shown that they can do it, and I would be interested to see, you know, what they would do. And like I said, it could be almost a totally different movie.
Yeah, because I think, like, they probably would have some sort of schedule mm-hmm. timeline for the studio, and I'm sure that if they don't have an original, like maybe in like 2 years, they'll have maybe a sequel.
Mm-hmm. Well,
to a movie.
I think, you know, a moment in life that they could really capitalize is like that first day of high school. If anyone remembers back to their first day of high school, you know, a lot of people felt the same way, and that's a scary thing, and mm-hmm. that would be something interesting that they could tackle. And like I said, you know, I know that, you know, they chose that age because it caters to the kids more.
Right.
But, you know, these kids that have enjoyed this movie here in 3 or 4 years are going to be getting up into that other range, and they can grow with the movie, just like some of the kids that watched the original Toy Story when they were, you know, 7 or 8 years old. You know, as they're getting older, you know, they're growing with Andy. And I think that's a really smart thing for them to do, because, you know, you capitalize a little bit, you know, even if it's short term, you know, for a kid, that nostalgia can be even just 3 or 4 years later. It's the same feeling that adults get, and they could really take advantage of that, and I think that they could do good things with it if they do it correctly. Yeah, if they're absolutely. Just going to try to cash in on it, I would hate to see that, because this movie's excellent, and I would really hate to see a cash grab after that. And they don't typically do that. Cars 2.
Yeah, exactly. Like that was a good one. Yeah, like, you know, they never made a sequel for Up or mm-hmm. Or Wall-E or, you know, some of the other movies. So I think they're more likely to continue, you know, original animated features than make sequels.
Yeah, well, they've got a lot of sequels on their docket coming up. You know, they've got Finding Dory and Toy Story 4, which I didn't think they would ever do. I am curious to see what they cook up with that one.
Because in Toy Story 3, Andy was in college.
Mm-hmm.
So what are they going to do? Like, Andy's now, out in the workplace.
Well, he gave the toys away. I can't remember the
girl. Oh, yeah, he gave it to a little girl.
Yeah,
that's right.
They've done several, shorts, like the Halloween short, and they've done a couple of those, and they've all been good. I am curious to see what they do. I enjoyed this movie quite a bit.
Yeah, cool.
This is a 9 for me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Right. Looks like we're on the same page here. That's going to do it for the Cinema Chat podcast this week. I'm Brent. You can follow me on Twitter at xnotmalcolm.
And I'm Rob. You can follow me on Twitter at robbap1.
You can follow the podcast at Cinema Chat Pod, or you can send us an email at cinemachatpod@gmail.com. Also, check out the website, cinemachatpodcast.com, and like, share, tweet, whatever you all do on your applications, on your phone, any of that stuff, wherever you listen, shoot us something. Let us know you're listening.
Right. Any feedback we greatly appreciate.
Yeah. Leave a review on iTunes. It wouldn't kill you.
or Stitcher.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We really appreciate it. You all have a good week.